We could have had, you know, two or three testimonies, about 10 minutes each, but we thought we would kind of adopt the style that we learned at the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation and just make it into an open circle and have some of us speak as we feel led about what we experienced there briefly and just one particular part of our experience. So you kind of saw Isaac's rundown of our daily activities, but those activities don't begin to explain what we experienced there in terms of our hearts and how we've been changed. So I'll open it up to our group now. And please introduce yourself first, if you feel led to speak. Bob, thank you for starting.
Good morning, people. It's an honor and a blessing to be in your church and to pray with you on this beautiful day. And I just want to say I'm so grateful to have been on this trip with your congregation, your leaders, your pastors, the future leaders and future pastors here, men and women, young and old. I couldn't have found a more receptive, wonderful group of people to go with. Originally, I was pretty apprehensive. I'm kind of reclusive and a loner most of the time. But I've been so welcome into your congregation by every one of you. I didn't think it would be too intimidating to go a week and several thousand miles with 16 of your finest. And it's really life-changing for me. I found confirmation in life and just the way they lived their lives, each one of them, from Claire to Cindy. I don't see Cindy here today. And so from the young to the old, very insightful people here. And I'm honored to come and worship in that way, you know, red, yellow, black, and white. We are all in this hoop of life together. And to go out to the land where my DNA resonates with and my ancestors have lived with a group of people who maybe haven't been there that much or just know what life is like on the res was real healing for me. We called it a journey of healing, reconciliation, and forgiveness. And the first thing I ask forgiveness from you. If there's any way my being Native has caused your family or your lives pain. We're all human beings. These people got to see the dichotomy of the situation that we live in out in the reservation. It's beautiful and it's sadness side by side. The rate of alcoholism, drug abuse, and hopelessness is really prevalent on our reservations. So I felt so good to be able to go in this way. And as a group and a collective consciousness, we sat and talked about everything we encountered along the way. Beautiful, sad, hard, and the easy things to talk about. Easy things might have been the smiles on the kids that really don't know that they're poor. They're rich in spirit. They've got the earth to run on and safety out there and the stars at night. So we felt close to the earth and to each other. We talked about our differences and we came to some agreements and understanding. So I just wanted to say thank you for letting your finest and me tag along on that trip. Wish you all could have been there. I share this little piece that we open our hearts, the eyes and ears of our hearts to each other. In this world, it's hard to keep them open. We must close that a little bit because this world is pretty harsh sometimes in our daily lives to each other. We opened our hearts out there. And it's hard to come back from that sacred place. That's what we call living together in what is sacred, the Wakan. So in this hoop of life that we can live together and mend that hoop and come together red, yellow, black, and white as one people, one heart, one mind, and one prayer for the future of our children and humanity.
Okay, I'm Claire, and I'm 15, and I'm the only youth who went on this trip, so I'm going to talk about what it was like. It wasn't extremely emotional for me. I think it was hard to empathize because, well, I'm not Native American myself, but I'm not a wife or I'm not a mother, and I've never experienced the death of anyone close to me. So I felt a bit disconnected. There's this quote by Joseph Stalin, and he says, "One death is a tragedy, and 1 million deaths is a statistic." And I really felt that. When we went to visit sites like where the Wounded Knee Massacre took place, it wasn't extremely emotional for me. I felt sad, but I felt like disconnected. And there's this small town. It's not even a town. It's called White Clay. And it's right outside of the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. There are like 4 liquor stores and nothing else really. And since you can't drink on the reservation, people just go there and get wasted. And they just like stay there, and the sole purpose of White Clay is to just perpetuate alcoholism and hurt the Native American people in that way. That was one of the first sites that we visited when we entered the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. And later, when we went to the lodge where we were staying, I met some kids. Richard, he's only 5, and his little brother Anton, he's 4, and their older sister Alexis, she's 10. So I hadn't really been feeling grief or so much like sympathy because I felt disconnected. But then when I met these children, I was so worried and concerned about their futures because of the high rates of alcoholism and suicide rates. I was so concerned because they seemed so happy, and I just... I was so worried. And the girl, she was holding like a toy gun, and she's only 10, and she had it pointed at herself, like in her mouth. And that was probably one of the hardest things to see. Like, where does that come from? Like, why is she doing that? So that was really hard and something that I struggled with. I was on this trip, I learned I was very exposed to a lot of things, and I was so shocked and confused. And all these laws that were passed to justify these things and the conditions. I just didn't understand, so... That's something I'm struggling with. But amid all the darkness there, there was so much beauty. In the Badlands, that was so beautiful. And the prairie, and in the night sky, you can see a lot of stars. So it's really beautiful out there, and I felt sad for myself that I hadn't experienced that growing up, and for people who live in the city who don't get to see that, like the natural beauty of the earth. That's something I felt sad about. And then also the Lakota culture was amazing. I got this bracelet at the Wounded Knee site. They had some merchants there who were selling jewelry, and there's a turtle on it, and the turtle represents the women because they carry their homes on their backs. They took care of the teepees. They transported them, and they set them up and took them down. They took care of them inside and out, and that was really meaningful, the strength of the women in Lakota culture. So that's where I'd like to end.
My name is Isaac, again. Before going on this trip, I had heard a lot about this Lakota idea of all my relatives that we're related to the earth, we're related to our whole environment. There's connections between everything. And I kind of nodded, and I was like, yeah, I kind of get that. It makes sense to me. But it didn't click for me until, I don't remember where it was, but at some point along the trip, someone said, if parents are at a loss, which that's part of life, it's really hard to raise a family, it's really hard to be married, you look at the buffalo and how they live, because they've been doing it for a lot longer than we have. And they're really good at it. They're really good at taking care of each other. And in the same way that like the turtles carry their homes on their back, and that's a good way to live, people in Lakota culture look at these buffalo as family, not just as pets or as food, but as teachers and as sources of wisdom. When you're confused, you go out and you sit and you just watch and you try to learn something from them. And so then, remembering the pictures that I had seen of mountains of buffalo skulls and hearing stories of tourists on trains going through the Black Hills, just shooting buffalo wantonly, took on a new meaning for me, not just as, oh, that's wasteful, or, oh, that's, you know, probably not good for our culture, and, oh, that was really sad because now the Lakota didn't have resources, this valuable resource. It wasn't about resources for me after that. It's not about natural resources that we're supposed to use. It was the teachers of the culture were killed massively. And that's a tragedy. That was, that hit me when I realized that.
One story that I wanted to share from our week together, exploring the potential of what it means to be connected to the land in a deep way and potential partnership and all of that, was on our last day we were invited into a lodge, the lodge with the Millers, who, if any of you have not seen Dakota 38, please email me. And I think actually we're going to have a chance next week to see it, but it is so many documentaries out there about how to like journey towards reconciliation, and it, to me, it's the best one that I've seen. And I look for them, you know, like I actively scour Netflix for them. This is the best one I've seen by far. It's just so moving, so good. Well, the Millers invited us into this lodge, and part of I think what impressed so many of us was the way that prayer is embedded so deeply into so much of life. When you're making a gift for somebody, when you're doing, well, also like in this lodge, there's like four stages, and in the beginning, you all share your prayers. But as is more familiar to our culture, we kind of just spoke out loud our prayers as opposed to really. But so many of us spoke the prayer that we talk a lot about in the church, like our desire to be able to be human, like to feel human, comes from Bonhoeffer, and it's good theology, you know. And I also spoke that my prayer to feel not like just like a mechanized machine in this like crazy world, but to just feel human, to be able to be, to make mistakes and feel pain, and that prayer was received in that space. And then at the end, as we run around, Alberta Miller, who I'm Jim Miller's wife, she's just such a loving way. Just received so deeply all of our humanity, all of our prayers, and also said it's also our prayer that you all pray to be treated like human, you know, and she received that with love. And she said, it's our prayer that we are treated like humans because we haven't been. This government does not treat us like human. We're away from our home, the Black Hills, which is legally ours. I mean, she didn't say these details because with her it was just receiving our love, but the truth is it challenged my own prayer life to say, why am I only praying? I should pray, may I be more human, and may I treat all people as human, and may I work with whatever authority and power I have in the government structure to fight for the humanity of others, but that should be as deeply in my prayer as my praying for my own humanity. And I felt loved and received and accepted, and also deeply convicted that I need to pray more deeply for other people. And I was so grateful for the generosity and love that she showed all of us. And I pray that I think all of our team was impacted, and my prayer has been that our whole congregation can be impacted. We weren't exactly sure what we were traveling for, other than to kind of like, we began this journey understanding how we are connected, and we thought this would be a good step. And as we continue to pray, I hope this journey continues to shape our ethos, our own spirituality, the way we pray for each other, and the direction. And I hope that Alberta's challenge to our group, myself, can challenge all of us.
Hi, church. My name is John, and I serve on staff here. We processed every night together around a fire, and there were so many deep learnings and sharings that came out during that time. And that, for me, was a real highlight, the chance to end every day together in a circle and to hear our reflections with one another under the stars before a fire. But one thing that this has been named a little bit that I felt so strongly on this trip, we talk within our church about the sense of disconnection we often experience within American society from both the land, from community, the alienation that our way of life creates, and the way that we tend to see one another and creation as objects that become commodities and that can be used and even dominated and exploited. So for me, it was a very challenging and humbling things to enter into and to experience a very different way of living, to spend time in the Badlands, in the Black Hills, and on the reservation with folks who could teach us what it means to see all things as connected and as related, and to say again and again, all my relatives, and to repeat that and to begin to experience that, and then to go through ceremonies together including the amazing gift of hospitality that we receive, the chance to experience a sweat that is entering into, it symbolizes entering into the womb of creation. And you begin to also experience, it's a very matriarchal culture, Lakota culture. And so you enter into this womb and you feel so close to the earth and you're bound so closely to one another in the midst of the heat and everything else. And what I found for myself personally is it's kind of a disciplining of the body to one another and to the earth in a way that brings tremendous gratitude and humility. When you're so close with one another, it's really hard to see or treat one another as objects. And so I felt very profoundly challenged by this way of life. I feel like I was given new eyes, and it was such a gift. And the final thing that I think is very connected to this is the culture of gift-giving that we experienced on our team. It was modeled to us by our leaders, Pastor Jim Bear and Bob, and we experienced it everywhere we went. And what struck me, and this is something that was taught to us on the final night by Jim Bear, is that everything that we have, he's saying, as natives, you know that what you have, you just have for a season. And so it's yours to receive with gratitude, but you also know when that season is up and when something that's very dear and precious to you, it's time for it to be passed on to somebody else. He modeled that. The people we were with modeled that. And as in a culture that so lifts up private ownership and has led us to do such horrendous things, including against these very Lakota people, to experience and to receive gifts back in such amazing ways was humbling, challenging, eye-opening, and something I think I'll be sitting with and wrestling with for a long time. So thank you for the opportunity to the whole church for us to go on this trip and represent our congregation.
So in American culture, our way that we deal with what it means to be a woman, and particularly a woman's cycle, I think at best we pretend it doesn't happen and women are supposed to act as though it just doesn't exist unless you're pregnant, in which case clearly something happened. But otherwise, women are supposed to go on, or like the other portrayal is often like women will become like unhinged and cause some sort of world chaos. There's so much negativity that's attributed to what it means to be a woman who has a cycle that is something that comes and goes. And I think one of the things that was incredibly impactful for me was to learn a different perspective about what it means to be a woman. We learned from the great wisdom of those who helped lead our trip, and including from, like, I got to chat with Alberta Miller, that in the Lakota culture, there's this understanding that a woman who is on her moon time is someone who's in a period of strength, of stronger emotions, and also, like, a strong spiritual time when it's important to take that time to then reflect. And it was pretty great, but also challenging, because in the Lakota culture, women who are on their moon time are also not expected to prepare meals or really like to be working. They actually traditionally would have a separate tent where a woman is able to go and take a time of rest, and either their friends or their husband would bring them food and care. And that was very challenging in some ways, because for me, I ended up feeling as though being told that I wasn't supposed to help was like being told that I wasn't going to be useful, which I think is so often how I think about things, is like, if I'm not being useful, then people might not like me. And I think it was really a challenge, and it was one where I don't think I would have learned this lesson as well if it had not been so directly presented to me. And I was so grateful for that opportunity to learn and to think about it in a different way, to think about myself as strong and as someone also even thinking about it using the term like moon cycle or moon time, to think of it as like something that is connected to the earth, and in that way able to really remember how we are connected with the things around us and that many things go through cycles, and was actually quite beautiful, but a challenging lesson to learn.
So there was nothing more. Go back up. This whole past week, as I've been trying to re-enter, you know, the off-the-res society, and been processing and thinking about this group. I just fell in love with this whole group. But I was keenly aware that I think that this trip was more powerful for the women in our group than for the men, particularly for the reasons Kendra just explained, to sit under the teaching of an incredibly gentle, powerful woman, to hear these ancient wisdoms, wisdoms that I think we in Christianity have lost, and just the terminology we even glean from Scripture, how women become unclean. And the same prohibitions exist in Judeo-Christian culture as exist in Christian or in Lakota culture. Women are removed from ceremony time during their moon cycle. Women are asked not to prepare meals. But in Judeo-Christian culture, because our stories get passed down through men, right, the women become unclean. Powerful becomes unclean. The food they touch becomes unclean. And there was nothing more beautiful for me this whole trip than to be driving a vehicle with four women, all of them talking about their bodies, all of them talking about their cycles. I had this moment where I'm like, do they even realize I'm in the car? But as I was reflecting on this, this was immediately after coming away from some of the women sitting in the teachings of Alberta Ironcloud. And I was struck with this awareness that maybe for the first time in their lives, their natural bodily rhythms are not dirty or unclean, but they're powerful, and they're connected to the greater creation. And it was beautiful, and I felt honored to just silently listen to this conversation. One story that I wanted to share, this was the most meaningful part for me. One van of us, six or seven of us, went to go visit a leader on Pine Ridge. His name is Mike Hermany Horses. And when we eventually found his place, because we relied on Pastor Jin's memory to get there, and when we eventually found the place, he's got this driveway that's about a mile long, and you can't see his house from the street, and he's got this deck off the back of his house, and it just overlooks miles upon miles of the most beautiful rolling hills and prairie you'll ever see in your life. And there's not another house to be seen. There's not any signs that anyone else even exists out there. And it was myself, Hermany Horses was sitting right here, and then John and Laura, Pastor Jin, Lane, Dana, And Mike is talking, and at this moment in our conversation, both Mike and I look off in this direction. And he looks at me, he says, "Did you hear that?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "What did you hear?" "I heard singing." He says, "Yeah." We look off and he says, "There's nothing over there." And we continue the conversation again, and maybe 3 or 4 minutes later, again, both our attention is drawn over here. And we were the only two that heard it. Just maybe 15 seconds of a song each time. And again, he says, there's nothing over there. And so it was like, it wasn't too surprising. As a native who's becoming more aware of sacred places, I'm aware of the songs that places hold and the stories that places hold. So it was literally, it was like the prairie was singing to us. And when we got back, Mark and I shared some time around a fire a few nights ago, and I told him this story, and he said, "Well, why do you think that happened? What's at work there?" And so I spent the whole next day thinking about why that would have happened, why only Her Many Horses and myself heard this song, and the rest of the group heard nothing. And you heard Claire mention White Clay, Nebraska. This happened the day after we went to White Clay, and I was totally ill-prepared for White Clay. I had read statistics about White Clay. I'd seen pictures of White Clay. It's been featured in documentaries and whatnot. But I had always assumed that what I was seeing of White Clay, Nebraska, was a small microcosm of a larger town. And places like White Clay exist all over Indian country. Where there's dry reservations, there's always a town just off the reservation that is profiting from the sale of alcohol to Indians. But in the past, what I've experienced is there'll be a white town, and the liquor store serves the white folks as well as the Indians. And we drove through White Clay and came out of White Clay, I think, before most of us even knew what was happening. And it's not a town. Nobody lives there. There's no houses. It's a street about as long as our parking lot and church combined. There's half a dozen liquor stores. There's no town. It's just a named place on the map with one purpose: to kill Indians. It's all it does. And we drove through, and there were just natives passed out all over the place, on the side of the street, in front of the buildings, off in the fields. And I was really, really angry that we were brought there. Lane kind of served as our navigator. He kind of grew up out in that area. I was angry at Lane because he was leading the lead vehicle that brought us through White Clay. I was angry at Pastor Jin because he's the pastor of our church. I mean, I was angry. I hardly talked the whole rest of the day. And it created probably some tension among the group. In driving through White Clay, I was never more aware that I was Indian and the rest of the group wasn't than going through White Clay. I felt like Indians were on display. We were an exhibit, the recipients of sadness and empathy. And for the first time in a very, very, very long time, I felt ashamed to be Indian. Just in that 30 seconds it took us to drive through and come back. And I carried that shame with me all that afternoon and evening, and shared a little bit. I didn't even have the words to vocalize what I was feeling around our circle time. But then the next day, we're sitting on this deck, listening to Mike speak, and there was a song that the only two Indians on that deck could hear, off in the distance. Clear as day, I heard the song. Clear as day, her many horses heard the song. We were the only two. And it was like the Creator was taking that shame away from me and saying, your being Indian is a gift. You don't need to feel shame. You don't need to feel that. Here's something special. Here's a song just for you two on this deck. And it was so beautiful. And I felt so prized and special. And I couldn't believe no one else on the deck heard it. But it was incredible. I am so grateful for this church. I'm grateful for Pastor Jin's leadership to bring together a group of people from various points around the world that could even think about doing a trip like this. We didn't even have the language to classify what this trip is, right? Sometimes I would slip up and I'd call it a missions trip, but missions trip indicates you have something to offer the people. We had nothing to offer. In our preliminary group meetings, I said, we're not going to save anyone but ourselves. And I think that's what happened. But throughout this trip, I was so proud of this team. I was so proud. This is the first time in my life I've ever been a part of a church where I could do a trip like this. And just trust the people to trust me. You know, we're putting you in a sweat lodge. What's that like? There's all kinds of fear. There's worry. Trust me. You know, and John came out of the sweat lodge and he says, Jim Bear, you continue to disrupt my thinking. And that's part of my role at this church, I really believe, is to be that disruptive force. Because we don't even realize when we breathe in the air of colonization, we don't even realize it. And it takes someone like spending a week with this man to my left who's just, you wouldn't believe he opens his mouth in the wisdom that just comes out. And I've had the pleasure of sitting under that for 2 years and trying to tell this group, we need Bob there because he's going to add to this. And I think everyone here fell in love with Bob this week and realizes what a great treasure he is. And so I'm proud to kind of pick up that mantle of disrupting things at times. And I'm sure John's way of thinking is not done being disrupted, or any of us. So...
Thank you, Jim Bear. Thanks, everyone. I affirm that Jim Bear is quite a disruptive force. And we are grateful for that. Just want to recognize a couple of people. Lane was very instrumental in helping set many things up, especially our transportation. And he is a native of South Dakota. He has great personal interest in the story of Native America and the people, and his heart is there, and I love him for it, and he's got such a beautiful and tender heart for our Native American people. And Dana coordinated so much of our logistics, so this couldn't have been possible without all of her work. So and everybody contributed. I mean, this is a really great team effort. And before I talk about Jim Bear and Bob and their incredible leadership, I just want to say that this is probably like a reverse mission, if anything. As many of you know from hearing me preach on a regular basis. In my travel to probably about 40 countries around the world, my studies, my observation, I truly believe that white American culture is simply the most impoverished culture in the world. When we talk about our emotional, psychological, and relational wealth, lots of other kinds of wealth, especially material wealth, professional, technical skills, there's lots of other kinds of wealth. But most Americans, I believe, are emotionally, psychologically, relationally, and spiritually close to bankruptcy. And it's, I feel incumbent upon me as the senior pastor of this church to help our congregation roam to various places so that we can be fed. And we try to provide some good pasture here, but it is not enough. This is an extraordinarily impoverished and bankrupt culture where we have allowed ourselves to be commodified in a country that seems oriented toward materialism and the crass search for material security, for money, for pensions, for somehow making it on our own by ourselves so that we don't have to go through what Americans think is the humiliation of depending on other people. I mean, we have really, really gone far from our roots as human beings in this culture. So if there is humanity that we can discover in the Pine Ridge Reservation or in the beautiful people and culture of Kenya or in South Africa or my home country of Korea or places here in this country too where there are pockets of humanity that still exist and are flourishing, then that's where we have to go and what we have to encounter and share. And there's humanity here too. So we were affirmed many times in our encounters of people feeling enriched by their encounter with us. But it is sparse. Humanity is sparse in this culture because we are so alone and so lonely. And that is no way to be a human being. And we've just got to stop this madness of filling ourselves with whatever other than humanity that God exemplified so clearly and fully in Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the ultimate example of the full human being. And he was connected to God and to human beings, to the marginalized, to the earth. He gave us an example of what it means to recover our humanity. And I believe that we took a significant step in that direction for the 17 of us that went. And that's why we're here to share that with this congregation. And we hope that there will be other opportunities for others of us to encounter something that deep and that rich. But I'm truly grateful for that. And so at this time, I want to recognize our two most important leaders, Pastor Jim Bear Jacobs, who is on staff here, and Bob Klanderud, who has kind of been like a spiritual leader and advisor to our congregation as long as Jim Bear has been related to us as Jim Bear's personal mentor and now a mentor to all of us here. A person with a Catholic background. Remember, Catholics are Christians too. And he is of Dakota heritage, and Jim Bear is of the Mohican heritage. So there's diversity between them, but there's also this connection in who they are to ancient ways that are closer, in my opinion, to the heart of Jesus than some of our more modern ways. So as a token of our appreciation and the gift-giving that we learned, Dana spearheaded this effort with some of the people here, our women, and some of the women related to this team. So, Dana, do you want to bring those gifts out? The thing is that the quilts are complicated things, and it was the first time that our women had tried to make quilts. Our basement has been kind of like a... I don't want to say it that way. What garment factory. for the workshop for this whole past week. And it's not finished. So the design is completed, but the quilting has not been done. So we want to present, let's present this gift to Bob first. Which one is for Bob? Okay, we need a couple of tall people to hold this up. Can you come to the center so we can, the whole congregation, see it? Yes, and Dana will explain these designs.
On our trip, there was one night we were going back where we were staying, and we were it was completely dark, and like part of the culture on the reservation is that there's not really signs for property, and so we couldn't find this like tiny little thing, and where I was looking for this small sign on the fence that was painted in black, and it was really dark, and there were no lights, and Bob was like, "No, look at the hills on the other side." Because they kind of dipped here, and then that's where the, because there was just like a, he allowed the land, like the land and the hills to guide us. And then we were able to find it very quickly. And so Bob is preparing to go to Sundance, and you taught us, Bob, that as you make something for somebody, you pray for them. And well, I had planned a simpler quilt, but I think that we needed to pray more for Bob than I had initially thought. but our prayer for you is that, like, that you will find guidance, that the hills can guide you as you dance, and you as you go, as a gratitude for guiding us also on this trip and guiding our hearts as we seek what it means to live and treat others as the Creator desires, and to treat ourselves also. So that's the hills.
Did Bob get to see this?
I don't think so. But we have to take it back because they're not done. And for Jim Bear and Susie, we stole Jim Bear for 5 days. And he has 4 kids. Wonderful children. So for Jim Bear and Susie, I feel like so many of us feel like Jim Bear has taught us to be able to see all of the creation around us and to really, like, not just think of it as an object, but think of it as something that is. and we designed this, and Mark was over, and he's like, "It looks like a path." Like, and we hadn't really thought of that, but that we had kind of chosen fabric because it had chose like the elements of creation, because Pastor Jim Bear and his family are teaching so many of us to be able to not just like pass something as just like a commodity, but just to be able to take joy and understand. And so and that we thank you, Pastor Jim Bear, for teaching us to be able to see all of creation and to not feel like we need to fight it, but to be able to live well, and that the way that you guide us through. So thank you so much for you and your family and the way that you give to us and to our congregation so much. We're so grateful for you in our lives. Thank you, Jim. These are really from the whole team. Many spouses and children. I can't tell you how many people came through. So it's from all of us.
Thank you again, Jim Bear and Bob, for your incredible and deeply spiritual leadership. We've truly experienced God in a special way there. And thank you to the congregation for your support and your prayers and sending us and giving our church the space to do things in a different way. I really, really love this congregation for precisely this kind of thing. Let us pray.